Eddie, the Collegiate Junior. Chapter 5. Spring Break. Now on spring break, Kathy and Paula decide to go and explore the Red Universe one day while Eddie and Mark are at work. But, this time, Kathy and Paula need not ride their bicycles to the portal off the paved path along the parkway. They now have the liberty of going into either of their backyards and using the portals that Mark installed a few months ago. Kathy and Paula, however, will still need their bicycles so they can get around once they get to the Red Universe. Paula rides her bicycle to Kathy's house. Kathy and Paula head to the portal behind the jasmine wall, where Paula asks, "What are we going to do when we get there?" Kathy replies, "I don't know. All I know is that I don't live here because my patio furniture and my park bench weren't there." Wearing their necklaces with red stones, Kathy and Paula enter the portal. Kathy states, "Take us to the Red Universe." Paula tells Kathy, "You forgot to raise your right hand." Kathy replies, "Oh. So, I did." Looking around, Kathy tells Paula, "Wow. Apparently, raising your right hand isn't really necessary either. We're here. My patio furniture isn't by the pool." Paula peeks over the jasmine wall and tells Kathy, "You got that right." Kathy asks, "Okay, so now where to?" Paula replies, "I don't know. How about a phone booth?" Kathy suggests, "There's one at the university. That's not too far from here." Kathy and Paula head toward the university, wondering where they live in the Red Universe. Arriving at the university, Kathy and Paula head to the student center to look through the phone directory, hoping to find their names. Looking through the directory, Kathy tells Paula, "I can't find mine or Eddie's name." Paula suggests, "Have you looked under your maiden name?" Kathy replies, "No," then frantically looks under her maiden name. Not finding an entry under her maiden name either, Kathy is sad. Paula looks for her name and doesn't find an entry under either her married or maiden name either. Kathy tells Paula, "I wonder where we are in this universe." Paula suggests, "Let's ride around campus and think about this." Kathy and Paula ride their bicycles around campus, where not much is going on since it is spring break. Passing the student center on their way out, Kathy suggests, "Hey, we should check the campus directory." Paula replies, "Yeah. All the students are listed in there." Walking inside the student center, Kathy and Paula find a student directory and look up their names. Unfortunately, searching through the student directory, neither Kathy nor Paula find their names. Kathy mentions, "Maybe we're not in graduate school in this universe either." Paula replies, "Yeah. That could be." Kathy then suggests, "Let's head over to Poplar Street and Ivy Avenue. Maybe we live there like in the Blue Universe." Not exactly knowing how to get to that area of town, Paula replies, "Lead the way." Arriving at Poplar Street, Kathy and Paula find Lena's house, where Kathy's counterpart in the Blue Universe is house-sitting for Lena's parents. But this is the Red Universe. Kathy and Paula have already discovered many differences among the three universes. Seeing neither her Porsche nor Eddie's MGB in the driveway, Kathy decides to explore further. Hoping to find some evidence of her existence in the Red Universe, Kathy rides her bicycle up the driveway and into the backyard. Parked behind the house, Kathy finds her Porsche hidden from street view. Riding out to the street, Kathy tells Paula, "Okay. I live here in this universe too. My Porsche is in the backyard." Hearing that something is going on in her driveway, Kathy's counterpart from the Red Universe comes outside and waves to Kathy and Paula, signaling for them to come to the side door. Kathy's counterpart tells them, "Don't tell me something went wrong again." Kathy replies, "No. Not at all. But we have some good news." They all go inside and sit at the kitchen table. Kathy and Paula explain to Kathy's counterpart all about the three parallel universes that they've discovered. Fortunately, Kathy's counterpart in the Red Universe knows all about the portal. Oddly, Kathy's counterpart also knows about the power of the red stones, as she found one in the portal, and by removing the red stone, the portal no longer worked. Kathy and Paula explain to Kathy's counterpart all about the blue and yellow stones. Coming from the Yellow Universe, Kathy and Paula are quite the surprise to Kathy's counterpart, who was unaware of the three parallel universes. Wondering what is different among the three universes, Kathy asks her counterpart, "In your universe, are you in graduate school?" Kathy's counterpart explains, "I sure am. Since I went to school over the summers, I finished my undergraduate degree in 3 years. Then, I got my master's degree, and now I'm working on my PhD, which I started last fall." Kathy replies, "Wow. Why didn't I think of that? In my universe, I'm in the middle of getting my master's degree." Kathy then asks, "What's your PhD thesis going to be about?" Kathy's counterpart explains, "I'll be researching intensive interval training and its causative relationship to angiogenesis in tissue undergoing a shift from aerobic to anaerobic metabolism and the associated neuroplasticity of the efferent peripheral nerves. We've been training that way for years, which is exactly what Eddie's and Mr. Fraser's training methods are all about." Not quite understanding the technicalities of what her counterpart is talking about, Kathy replies, "Wow. That really sounds impressive." Kathy's counterpart then mentions, "I really don't know why I want to get a PhD. When I graduate, I want to get a job as an elementary school gym teacher. I don't exactly need a PhD for that." Kathy asks her counterpart, "What's Eddie doing in your universe?" Kathy's counterpart explains, "He's working at Angelo's a few days a week. He's built a few dune buggies. And he spends a lot of time buying gold and selling it in the future." Kathy's counterpart's description of what Eddie is doing in her universe is the same as what Eddie is doing in Kathy's universe. Kathy and Paula then give Kathy's counterpart the rundown on what their counterparts in the Blue Universe are doing now. Quite surprised to hear that Eddie, in the Red Universe, is buying and selling gold, Kathy asks, "Are you and your Eddie going to buy a house someday?" Kathy's counterpart explains, "We bought a house. It's over on Rolling Hill Road. But we can't live there right now. So, we're house-sitting for Lena's parents while they are in Germany." Desperately wanting to know, Paula asks, "Where do I live in your universe?" Kathy's counterpart explains, "You and Mark live on Orchard Lane. Mark built your house, along with Bobby B." To Paula, hearing that her counterpart lives on Orchard Lane is definitely good news. Kathy, quite perplexed, asks her counterpart, "How is it that you can't live on Rolling Hill Road?" Kathy's counterpart explains, "It's Chucky. He's in a gang now, and they've tried to break into our house a few times. They've even shot at the house once. So, the opportunity came up to live here for a while, and we jumped on it. Eddie goes over to our house every so often and checks on the place. And Officer Hayes drives by occasionally to check it for us. Since we've moved out, they've left the place alone. That's why my car is hidden in the backyard. We don't want them to know where we live." Kathy asks, "Where's all the patio furniture?" Kathy's counterpart replies, "It's in the detached garage, along with my park bench." Now quite angry with Chucky, Kathy exclaims, "That Chucky is such a piece of shit." Paula asks, "But, wait. In this universe, me and Mark live on Orchard Lane." Kathy's counterpart replies, "Yeah. They don't know that you guys live there. Your phone number is unlisted, like ours is now." Paula asks, "Why don't they know where me and Mark live?" Kathy's counterpart explains, "After what happened with me and Eddie, you guys have been really careful. If you guys catch any of them following you, then you just road trip them." Paula, also quite angry with Chucky, exclaims, "What a piece of shit." Kathy exclaims, "We've got to stop the Chucky." Kathy's counterpart explains, "We've tried. Chucky, Goldshit, Haynes, and a bunch of others have formed a gang and are dealing drugs." Kathy suggests, "Maybe we should go and pay the Chucky a visit." Kathy's counterpart asks, "What good will that do?" "It will only make them more violent." Kathy replies, "Not if he sees two of us." Kathy's counterpart suddenly exclaims, "Like I did with Paul Mahoney." Kathy replies, "Exactly. At least there are a few constants between the yellow and red universes." Kathy also explains to her counterpart how Eddie and Mark took Chucky through the portal, dumped him off in Hawaii, and it took Chucky 4 days to make his way back home. Kathy's counterpart likes that idea even more and tells Kathy and Paula, "Now, I definitely want to go and pay the Chucky a visit." Kathy tells her counterpart, "So, let's go. What's stopping us?" Kathy's counterpart goes into the bedroom and gets her necklace housing her red stone. The group gets on their bicycles and all head across town to Chucky's house. Arriving at Chucky's house, Kathy's counterpart takes 3 rocks and makes a temporary portal in Chucky's front yard. Kathy's counterpart knocks on the door, hoping that Chucky is home. Kathy and Paula watch from behind the bushes across the street, hiding Kathy's counterpart's bicycle. Mrs. Black answers the door, and Kathy's counterpart asks, "By any chance, is Charles here?" Mrs. Black yells up the stairs, "Charles, you have a visitor." Kathy's counterpart takes a few steps back, hoping that she can somehow lure Chucky outside into her temporary portal. Chucky comes outside, along with Goldstein. Kathy's counterpart thinks that she is in luck, being able to dispose of Chucky and Goldstein in one fell swoop. Kathy's counterpart tells Chucky, "I came here to talk." Chucky replies, "What's it to you?" Goldstein adds, "Yeah, yeah. I wonder what the chick wants." "Yeah, yeah. Whatever it is, it's going to cost her big time." Luring Chucky and Goldstein into her temporary portal, Kathy's counterpart tells Chucky and Goldstein, "Can you guys step over here in the shade with me? I want to get out of the sun. The sun is really bright today." Goldstein, whose eyes are dilated, replies, "Yeah, yeah. I like the shade. Yeah. The sun's really bright today." Goldstein has obviously taken way too many drugs today. Kathy and Paula watch as Kathy's counterpart begins to dispose of Chucky and Goldstein. Standing in the portal, Kathy's counterpart tells Chucky and Goldstein, "First, I want to apologize." Goldstein looks at Chucky and tells him, "Yeah, yeah. It's a little too late for that." "Yeah? Don't you think?" Holding her red stone, Kathy's counterpart announces, "Hawaii, today." Kathy, along with Goldstein and Chucky, are immediately transported to Hawaii. Kathy's counterpart, as calm as she can be, walks from the portal out to the road, followed by Chucky and Goldstein. Looking around at the scenery, Kathy's counterpart exclaims, "Wow. It's really beautiful here." Kathy's counterpart turns toward Chucky and Goldstein and tells them, "As I said, I would like to apologize. So, please enjoy your free trip to Hawaii, courtesy of my time machine. And if I ever catch you, or any of your gang, around my house again, I'll transport you 2 assholes to some deserted island in the middle of nowhere. Got it?" Chucky exclaims, "We're not in Hawaii." Goldstein replies, "Yeah. This is some kind of trick." "Yeah, yeah. She's tricking us. I know it." Kathy's counterpart tells Chucky and Goldstein, "You guys keep telling yourselves that," and walks back into the portal, disappearing right in front of Chucky's and Goldstein's eyes. Returning to her place, Kathy's counterpart walks out of the portal, seeing Mrs. Black standing at the front door, yelling out, "Charles, you left the door open. Charles, Where are you? Mrs. Black could just as easily have closed the door herself, but doing so will give her one less thing to complain about. Walking back into the temporary portal, Kathy's counterpart tells Mrs. Black, Mrs. Black, would you mind coming here for a second? Mrs. Black walks over to Kathy's counterpart and asks, and just what do you want? Kathy's counterpart tells Mrs. Black, your little Chucky isn't here right now. I transported him to Hawaii in my time machine. Mrs. Black exclaims, you've done nothing of the sort. There's no such thing. Don't try to fool me. Kathy's counterpart replies, sure there is. Where's your imagination? Mrs. Black exclaims, what do you think I am, stupid or something? Kathy's counterpart waves over to Kathy, signaling for her to come over. When Kathy walks up, Kathy's counterpart tells Mrs. Black, Mrs. Black, I would like to introduce you to Kathy number 2, who came from a parallel universe to visit me today. Playing along, Kathy tells Mrs. Black, hi. I'm Kathy number 2. I'm from the yellow universe. It's so nice to meet you, Mrs. Black of the red universe. Almost in a panic, Mrs. Black exclaims, what in the world is going on here? Kathy's counterpart tells Mrs. Black, if you really want to know, your little Chuck has spiked your coffee with some of his drugs. And now, you're seeing 2 of me. Unless, of course, you have a better explanation. Kathy's counterpart then tells Kathy, thank you for your assistance, Kathy number 2. You may now step behind the imaginary curtain. I am now going to take Mrs. Black on a little trip, no pun intended. Kathy heads back to the bushes where Paula is hiding, watching to see what happens next. Seeing Mrs. Black now within the portal, Kathy's counterpart announces to Mrs. Black, please fasten your seatbelt and bring your seat to the upright position. You wouldn't want to delay the aircraft, now would you? Now in a panic, Mrs. Black exclaims, what's this all about? Kathy's counterpart whispers, Hawaii, today, transporting herself and Mrs. Black to Hawaii. Kathy's counterpart and Mrs. Black immediately arrive in Hawaii. Seeing Chucky and Goldstein standing 100 feet down the street wondering what to do, Kathy's counterpart tells Mrs. Black, see? There's your little Chucky and his dope peddling friend. Have a nice trip and thank you for flying with us. Please fly with us again in the future. Oh, and if I were you, I would watch my coffee cup very closely. Mrs. Black rushes out of the portal, hobbling down the street as fast as she can toward Chucky, yelling, Charles! Charles! Kathy's counterpart re-enters the portal, leaving Chucky, Goldstein, and Mrs. Black in Hawaii with no easy way to get home. Returning to her place again, Kathy's counterpart takes the 3 rocks forming the temporary portal and tosses them into the bushes. Walking across the street, Kathy's counterpart smiles and tells Kathy and Paula, well, that's taken care of. Kathy silently exclaims, I can't believe you got rid of Mrs. Black too. Kathy's counterpart explains, she's an enabler. She keeps defending the Chucky, believing that he can do no wrong. We'll see what happens when they try to make sense out of this one. Kathy replies, with any luck, they'll all end up in a sanitarium. Paula comments, yeah, seriously. That's where they all belong anyway. Thinking about this situation, Kathy tells her counterpart, I can tell you this, for sure. She's going to call the police. Kathy's counterpart replies, good. Let her. When the police question me, I'll just admit to the whole thing. I can hear it now. Kathy, did you put Chucky, Goldstein, and Mrs. Black into a time machine and transport them to Hawaii? Since I really want to hear the rest of the story and where this is going, yes, I did. Kathy, what does this alleged time machine look like? Well, you see, the time machine is really a red rock. I tell the red rock where I want to go, and it takes me there. Seriously, now. What's that going to sound like? No one is going to believe that. Kathy and Paula laugh, both wishing that they can be around when that conversation goes down. Kathy's counterpart then comments, "Now, I want to find out where the bitch Grig lives, and get rid of her too. And I might as well get rid of Donna and Dana Harmon while I'm at it. But I'm thinking that I'll just save that for another day." Terry Haynes, also known as the Bitch Krieg, and the Harmon sisters, really lucked out today. But Kathy's counterpart in the Red Universe clearly has plans to dispose of them when the opportunity presents itself. Kathy's counterpart then asks, "Okay. Now what?" Kathy suggests, "Let's go rock hunting." Kathy's counterpart asks, "For the blue and yellow stones?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. I'll show you where they are." Kathy, Paula, and Kathy's counterpart head to the rocky outcropping near the middle school, where they will hunt for blue, yellow, and red stones. Kathy and Paula, knowing exactly where the blue, yellow, and red stones are, quickly locate them and dig them up. During the excavation of the large blue stone, Kathy's counterpart mentions, "I need to give half of these stones to Paula and Mark." Paula mentions, "In our universe, Mark had two triangular pieces of marble cut over at the stone yard. We put one in our side yard, and one in Kathy and Eddie's backyard behind the jasmine wall. We use them for our portals." Kathy's counterpart replies, "That sounds pretty cool. Maybe I can get Mark, in my universe, to make us one too." Once they've acquired all the known stones, they head back to the house on Poplar Street. Once inside, as Kathy's counterpart washes the stones in the sink, Kathy asks, "In your universe, where's Braden?" Kathy's counterpart replies, "He's still a police officer at the university and running track." Kathy mentions, "Yeah. That's the same as in my universe. In the blue universe, after high school, everyone has scattered. The tribe is no longer together. And in that universe, Eddie never graduated from high school." Kathy's counterpart replies, "That's really sad. I wonder why that is." After a moment of silence, Kathy's counterpart asks, "In the blue universe, is Mr. Fraser still at the high school?" Kathy replies, "Yeah." Kathy's counterpart asks, "And Mr. Crumb is still the principal?" Kathy replies, "Yeah." Kathy's counterpart replies, "I bet, in the blue universe, Eddie never went to his hearing with Dr. Brooks. That caused everything in the future in that universe to take an alternate path. With three parallel universes, minor perturbations within any of them can cause a drastically different future." Kathy then comments, telling her counterpart, "In our universe, the Chucky is not in a gang. I wonder why that is." Paula asks Kathy's counterpart, "In your universe, did Eddie kick the shit out of the Chucky when Chucky threw the javelin at Eddie?" Kathy's counterpart replies, "I remember when that happened. But no. Eddie thought about it, but decided not to." Kathy exclaims, "In my universe, Eddie really kicked the shit out of the Chucky. When Eddie was done, the Chucky ended up with a concussion, a broken nose, a bunch of broken ribs, two broken arms, a broken hip, a broken jaw, and lost all his front teeth. The hospital took weeks putting him back together again." Paula adds, exclaiming, "Seriously. After that ass kicking, I don't see how the Chucky would ever dare to bother Eddie again." Kathy's counterpart surmises, "So, Eddie, by kicking the shit out of the Chucky, really subdued the Chucky in the future?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. It sure seems that way." Kathy's counterpart concludes, "Well, then I hope that me sending Chucky and gold shit to Hawaii will have the same effect, albeit a little later." Kathy tells her counterpart, "You're really smart." Kathy's counterpart replies, "Thank you." After a most interesting morning, Kathy and Paula return to their own universe. While they are deciding where to eat lunch, Kathy and Paula walk around the pool as Kathy checks the skimmers for dead frogs. Kathy tells Paula, "The me in the red universe seems like she's a whole lot smarter than I am." Paula replies, "Yeah. I noticed that. Kathy exclaims, hey, now. Paula laughs and tells Kathy, you set yourself up and walked right into that one girl. Kathy laughs and replies, I did, didn't I? Kathy continues, but she really sounds smart. She figured out how the blue universe has a different outcome than the yellow or red one. And she uses really big words like perturbations. And her thesis topic is at the forefront of research. Not even the professors fully understand it. Paula replies, she also talks a lot differently than you do. Kathy boasts, yeah, but I've been working out more. Paula asks, how do you know? Kathy replies, I checked out her body. I definitely work out more. And I'm faster than she is. She was working hard to keep up with us on the bicycles. Paula observes, she certainly had no problem getting rid of the Chucky, Goldshit, and Mrs. Black. She just disposed of them, kind of like taking out the trash. But I can't say that I blame her. Kathy starts laughing, prompting Paula to ask, what's so funny? Kathy replies, I can just imagine what will happen when Mr. Black gets home from work. Paula predicts, with the Chucky and Mrs. Black gone, maybe he'll throw a party. Kathy and Paula sit at the patio table and talk more about the different universes, then head out together for lunch at the Greek restaurant down the street from the pizzeria. At the service station, Angelo arrives at work when Eddie is finishing up his lunch. Angelo takes a seat across the desk and Eddie fills Angelo in on the morning's activities. After catching up on the station's business, Angelo tells Eddie, "The stocks have done really great, and I made a lot of money in gold this year. Thank you for all the advice you've given me over the years." Eddie replies, "No problem." Abruptly changing the subject, Angelo tells Eddie, "I have some good news. I'm moving back to Greece." Expecting the announcement sooner or later, Eddie exclaims, "Really? What made you decide to move back?" Angelo explains, "An opportunity came up for me. There's a repair shop for sale near my hometown. I checked it out when I was on vacation there over the summer. Since I've been investing, I've made enough money to buy the shop. This is a dream come true for me." Eddie, who sees that Angelo is really happy, gives Angelo a fist bump, telling him, "Awesome." After some more discussion, Angelo informs Eddie, "I'm going to have to put the shop up for sale. I can't move until this place is sold." Eddie tells Angelo, "I'll buy it from you." Quite surprised by Eddie's response, Angelo asks, "Seriously? You want this place?" Making the deal sound easy, Eddie replies, "Yeah. I'll take it, just as it is." Angelo tells Eddie, "I'll have to sell the tools and the machining equipment with the station. It would cost way too much to ship all that shit to Greece." Eddie replies, "That's okay. I'll take all that too." To Angelo, Eddie's deal sounds too good to be true. But Eddie knew this day would eventually come, so he has been prepared. Eddie tells Angelo, "When you move to Greece, I can still send you some stock tips." Angelo asks, "How do we do that?" Eddie replies, "We'll just do it over the phone. The cost of an international call is nothing compared to what we're making in the stock market. And if you're still holding any gold, be sure to get rid of it sometime in mid-August." Angelo explains, "I still have some, but not much." Taking the helm, Eddie proposes, "We can have Mr. Davies draw up the sales contract for the station. Just figure out what the price is, and we'll work something out. We'll let Mr. Davies work out the details." Angelo asks, "It's that easy?" Eddie replies, "The only reason some things are hard is because people make them hard." Angelo is relieved to hear that selling the service station is going to be much easier than he originally expected. If there's one thing Angelo learned from Eddie over the last few years, it's to not stress over things. When Eddie gets home, he yells out to Kathy, "Guess what? Kathy guesses, McCutcheon showed up at the service station. Eddie replies, no. We don't work on pogo sticks or tricycles. Kathy laughs and tells Eddie, hey now. He might have a big boy's bicycle with training wheels by now. Giving Kathy the good news, Eddie tells her, Angelo is moving back to Greece. All excited, Kathy asks, does this mean you're going to buy the service station? Eddie replies, that's the plan. Kathy, also knowing this day would eventually come, gives Eddie a high five and exclaims, awesome. Now curious, Kathy asks, when is Angelo moving back to Greece? Eddie replies, he doesn't know yet. There's a service station for sale near his hometown back in Greece, and he wants to buy it. Kathy then asks, how much does Angelo want for his service station? Eddie replies, we didn't talk about that yet. I kind of caught him off guard when I told him that I would buy it. All of this came as a big surprise today. Kathy tells Eddie, all this sounds really great. It sounds like something is falling into place. Kathy then tells Eddie, hey, do you want to hear something funny? Eddie asks, what's that? Kathy explains, me, Paula, Erica, and Karen were training after lunch at the track. And this really skinny girl was running laps around the track, and Paula mentioned to us, that girl is anemic. So, Karen starts laughing hysterically. So, Paula asks Karen, what's so funny? So, Karen explains that, when she was a kid, her aunt said someone was anemic. So, Karen thought the word anemic was two words, like the person is anemic. So, Karen didn't know what anemics were, so she looked it up in the dictionary. And she found out that the word anemic refers to nematodes, which are worms. So, Karen thought her aunt was calling someone a worm. Eddie laughs and exclaims, you can't be serious. That's kind of funny. Right before spring break is over, a surprise visitor arrives at the service station one afternoon right before Eddie is ready to go home. Driving his mother's car, Chucky pulls into the station, walks into the office, and stands there waiting for help. Seeing who is sitting in the office, Eddie tells Angelo, another clown just drove in. He's waiting in the office, staring at us through the window. Angelo asks, who is it? Eddie replies, it's the Chucky, the son of Mrs. Black, the lady who wasn't too happy with her Johnson rod. He's the asshole that threw the javelin at me when I was in high school. And Richard said to call the police if he ever shows up here. Angelo tells Eddie, well, let's see who gets the pleasure of helping him. Rock, paper, scissors. On three. 1, 2, 3. Whenever a potential problem comes into the station, rock, paper, scissors is Eddie and Angelo's way of deciding who gets the pleasure of dealing with him or her. Today, Eddie puts out a rock and Angelo puts out scissors. Eddie tells Angelo, good luck. He's pretty much a moron. I'll call the police. Angelo walks into the office to see what Chucky wants, and Eddie uses the shop telephone to call the police. Angelo walks into the office, asking Chucky, how can I help you today? Chucky replies, I want Eddie to look at my car. Angelo asks, what's the problem with it? Chucky replies, it has a problem that only Eddie can fix. Angelo, now knowing that Chucky can only provide free entertainment, yells back into the shop, hey, Eddie. Come here when you get a chance. After placing the call to the police, Eddie walks into the office, asking, what's up? Angelo explains, this gentleman wants you to take a look at his car. He says he's got a problem that only you can fix. Eddie suspects Chucky is full of shit and is up to something. Eddie looks at Chucky and energetically exclaims, wow. Chucky, you're still alive. How have you been? Pointing outside through the window, Chucky, less than energetically, tells Eddie, I want you to look at my car. Eddie looks out the window, looks at Chucky's car, and tells Chucky, okay.
I've looked at it. Now what? Chucky tells Eddie, it's running kind of rough. Angelo interjects, it can't be the Johnson rods. They are in good shape. Eddie tells Chucky, it will be a few minutes. I need to finish up what I'm working on. Then, I'll take a look at it. Chucky tells Eddie, I'll wait. Angelo and Eddie get back to work, hoping that the police arrive quickly enough to take Chucky away before they have to look at his car. Finished with the vehicle he is working on, Eddie walks into the office and writes up a service ticket for Chucky's car. Chucky's only complaint is that the engine is running rough. Eddie drives the vehicle into the service bay, noticing that the engine does not run rough. Eddie opens the hood, checking a few common items that are usually a problem when an engine runs rough. Bothering Eddie is Chucky, who is in the office, constantly peering through the window to the service area. Eddie tells Angelo, I can't find anything wrong with this thing. Angelo tells Eddie, it's not the car. It's the driver. Just delay him until the police show up. We don't have time for this shit. Eddie walks into the office and tells Chucky, there's nothing wrong with your engine. It seems to be running fine right now. If you continue to have a problem, bring it back in, and we'll check it out. Chucky replies by asking, didn't you see the leak? Eddie replies, no. Chucky tells Eddie, I can show you where it is. Eddie sighs and reluctantly tells Chucky, okay. Come back with me and show me where the leak is. After all, Eddie has to stall Chucky until the police arrive. Eddie and Chucky walk back into the service area where Chucky will show Eddie a problem he allegedly missed. Standing on the right side of the vehicle, Chucky looks into the engine compartment trying to find the leak. Eddie watches, wondering whether Chucky even knows what he is looking at. Eddie asks, did you find it? Chucky replies, no. I'm trying to remember where it is. As Chucky is searching for the leak, Eddie catches a glimpse of someone walking up behind him in the mirror, watching as the person approaches. As Chucky is mumbling about how he saw the leak earlier, Eddie abruptly turns around, forcefully grabbing the arm of the person who was about to strike him on the head with a metal pipe. Quickly forcing the person into an arm lock, Eddie dislocates the attacker's right shoulder, causing him to scream in pain. Raising the person overhead, Eddie slams his assailant onto the concrete floor. Having enough of these kinds of problems in his life, Eddie forcefully bends Goldstein's right leg, rotating the foot 180 degrees, deranging both Goldstein's knee and ankle. Goldstein again screams out in pain as Eddie tells him, "Shut up, Junior. I'm not playing your games anymore. So, I'm putting an end to them." Recalling how Goldstein took money from Mr. Crumb to end or damage Eddie's track career, Eddie forcefully hyperextends Goldstein's left forearm, breaking Goldstein's left elbow. Eddie's defensive moves, which occurred in less than 15 seconds, will take the hospital months to repair, if even possible. Angelo, who witnessed the entire altercation, rushes over, yelling, "What's going on here?" Officer Hayes, who also witnessed the altercation, runs up and answers, "Attempted assault with a deadly weapon, 4-1. Unfortunately, Officer Hayes was not able to get out of his car and rush to the scene fast enough to stop Goldstein from striking Eddie. Officer Hayes puts Chucky in handcuffs, telling his partner to radio for two ambulances, one for Goldstein and another for Chucky. Chucky, per prior recommendation from his psychiatrist, will be transported to and committed to a mental institution, which Kathy refers to as a sanitarium. Goldstein is a different story. He will likely end up at the trauma center. Richard asks Eddie, "Tell me what happened." Eddie explains that Chucky was going to show me a leak in his engine compartment. I was standing there, watching him, as he was trying to find it. Goldschick came up from behind me and was going to hit me with a pipe. So, I kicked his ass. Richard asks, "How did you know he was coming up from behind?" Eddie points to the mirror on the wall, explaining, I saw him in the mirror. Richard comments, that's an unusual place for a mirror. Eddie explains, it's tilted slightly downward, so that we can easily center the car over the lift as we drive it in. Richard replies, that's ingenious. Eddie adds, it's apparently good for seeing when someone is going to attack you from behind as well. Angelo asks Richard, what's the matter with these guys? Richard replies, drugs, stupidity, and their parents. And that's just a start. I'm afraid I'll be picking these two characters up for one reason or another for years to come. Eddie comments, loud enough for Chucky to hear, maybe I'll put the Chucky in my time machine and transport him to China. That will get rid of him for a while. Chucky yells out, see. He has a time machine. I told you. He admitted it. Arrest him. Eddie yells back to Chucky, yeah, Chucky. I have a time machine. And I'm coming to get you someday. Chucky yells out, stop him. Somebody, stop him. Richard laughs and tells Eddie and Angelo, I can see why the psychiatrist wants this character sent to the loony bin. Eddie adds, yeah. The Chucky took way too much dope. They have to put him in the sanitarium, where they'll give him lots of antidote for years to come. Two ambulances arrive in tandem. Chucky, fighting with the paramedics, is put in restraints and taken away first. Goldstein, however, presents a problem as he lies on the ground, still screaming in pain. One paramedic asks, "What happened to this guy?" Richard replies, "That character attacked the mechanic, and the mechanic kicked his ass." Evaluating Goldstein's condition, the other paramedic comments, "This guy doesn't look too good. We'd better take this one to the trauma center." Hearing the conversation, Eddie tells the paramedics, he's got a dislocated shoulder, a broken arm, a torn-up knee, and a torn-up ankle. And he's a drug dealer. So, don't give him any painkillers. Eddie takes a photograph of Goldstein as the paramedics are working. As they are placing Goldstein on a stretcher, one paramedic mentions, he's got a pretty bad knot on his head. He probably has a concussion. Offering his opinion, Eddie replies, no, he doesn't. His skull is empty. There's nothing up there to damage. Richard can tell that Eddie is perturbed by Chucky and Goldstein conspiring to attack him. Richard recalls, aren't they the same two characters who attacked Officer Braden at the county pool a few summers ago? Eddie tells Richard, yeah. Those are the guys. Hopefully, they'll put those two jerks away for a long time this time. Richard replies, from the looks of this Goldstein character, he'll be out of commission for a while. And, hopefully, this psychiatrist, whoever he is, will lock this Charles Black character away for a long time. It will certainly make my life easier. Eddie comments, we can only hope. Once the ambulance takes Goldstein away, Eddie slams Mrs. Black's hood closed and drives Chucky's mother's car out of the service bay, parking it on a street where parking is not allowed, directly in front of a fire hydrant. When Eddie returns to the service bay, he tells Richard that car on the street is illegally parked. You should have it towed. Richard replies, it would be my pleasure. Eddie replies, thanks. Richard then suggests, by the way, get a restraining order against those two clowns. If they come back, you can immediately have them arrested. Eddie replies, I'm going to do that. Richard radios for a tow truck to impound Mrs. Black's car, then gets back on patrol. Chucky is on his way to the sanitarium. Goldstein is headed to the hospital, where the doctors in the trauma center will try to repair his shoulder, elbow, knee, and ankle as he recovers from his concussion. Eddie and Angelo get back to work, hoping not to see Chucky or Goldstein for a long time. The next day, Mrs. Black arrives at the service station by taxicab to retrieve her automobile. With her automobile nowhere to be found, Mrs. Black walks into the service area, yelling, Edward Boganskaya. Where is my car? Eddie yells back, "Why don't you ask your little Chucky?" Mrs. Black exclaims, "You've traumatized Charles." They had to take him to the hospital. Sounding a bit like Mr. Zunday, Eddie calmly replies, "That's right. How could I forget? I remember now. I told him, maybe I'll put the Chucky in my time machine and transport him to China. That must have really traumatized him. I clearly see your point." Mrs. Black yells out, "Edward Boganskaya, I don't know how you can live with yourself." Mrs. Black then demands to know, "Where is my car, Edward Boganskaya?" Eddie replies, "It was illegally parked. So, it got impounded. And, by the way, there was nothing wrong with your engine." Mrs. Black yells back, "I know that." Eddie sarcastically asks, "Then, Mrs. Black, please tell me why did the little Chucky drive in, wanting us to look at it?" Mrs. Black asks, "What are you talking about?" Eddie explains, "Your little Chucky drove your car in here yesterday. He said it was running rough and claimed that the car had a leak. When your little Chucky was trying to find the leak, that drug-dealing gold shit asshole came up behind me and tried to hit me with a pipe. So, I kicked the shit out of him. Wake up. Your little Chucky has a serious problem." Mrs. Black starts crying, telling Eddie, "Charles has problems." Before Mrs. Black can finish, Eddie yells out, "Yeah. His problem is you. You've been sticking your head in the sand about his drug problem for years. Just look at who he's running around with. And you've been sticking your head in the sand about his bullying for years too. That's because you're a bully yourself. My first memory of you is when I was a kid, when you used to come up to my mother and Mark's mother in the farmer's market, saying, 'Well, well, well, if it isn't Mariana Svoboda and Nina Boganskaya.'" Mrs. Black, in shock that someone is laying it on the line with her, stands and listens to Eddie. Eddie continues, "And one day, your little Chucky decides to act a little cool and give Erica a wedgie. Then, he gets the shit kicked out of him by Erica, and you blame it on me. And then, your little Chucky throws a javelin at me, cuts my leg and sprains my hip. Then, I kick the shit out of your little moron, and somehow it's my fault. If you even bothered to attend Mr. Crumb's trial, you would have found out that Mr. Crumb paid Andy Goldshit $500 to keep me and Mark out of a meet. And Goldshit split the money with your little Chucky. My only regret is that I didn't kick the shit out of his fat ass even more than I did. And if I knew Mr. Crumb was behind it, I would have kicked the shit out of him too. But your buddy, Mr. Crumb, is in prison now, and I hear he's getting the shit kicked out of him every day. And that's what's eventually going to happen to your little Chucky." Trying to defend her son, Mrs. Black exclaims, "Everyone bullies Charles. Including you, Edward." Eddie replies, "And justifiably so. The Chucky is a first-order bully. He starts it. I'm a second-order bully, which means I keep the first-order bullies in check. Someone has to do it. Otherwise, your little Chucky will never learn. Your little Chucky is a loser, and it's totally your fault. You raised him that way." Facing the truth, Mrs. Black is in tears, telling Eddie, "I tried. I tried." Eddie exclaims, "Seriously? You tried? Don't you get it? Stop sticking your head in the sand and open your eyes. So, get out of here and don't ever come back until you grow up." Mrs. Black walks across the street, sobbing her heart out, to call a taxicab with something more to think about. Eddie gets back to work, wondering if anything he said got through to Mrs. Black. When Eddie buys the station from Angelo, Eddie has decided that he will not deal with clients like Mrs. Black, Jimmy O'Brien, Mr. O'Brien, or Mr. Crumb, should he ever get out of prison. All they do is cause trouble. And if they do come in and Eddie is in the mood for some free entertainment, he might just take a look at their problem. Otherwise, Eddie will just send them to a repair shop that is part of a department store a few miles away, which has the reputation of having the worst mechanics imaginable. On Sunday, before classes start again at the university, as Eddie and Kathy are about to leave for church, Ed's counterpart runs out from behind the jasmine wall and into the driveway. Kathy yells out to him, "Hey, what universe are you from?" Sounding very concerned, Ed's counterpart yells back, "This one. Get back inside." Eddie drives back into the garage, followed by his counterpart, who appears to have a grave concern. Eddie closes the garage door, wondering what the problem is. Seeing the worried look on his counterpart's face, Eddie asks, "What's up? What's going on?" Eddie's counterpart replies, "Someone is going to break into the house this morning during church. So don't go. Stay home and catch him." Kathy exclaims, "What? Are you serious?" Eddie's counterpart elaborates, "I'm totally serious. Someone broke in while we were at church and stole the stereo, television, track medals, and all the jewelry. And they got some money. We haven't figured it all out yet. So, we decided it would be better to stop it from happening. Whoever it is, he's going to break in through the side door. The glass was broken and the door was open when we got home. And the door was cut with a saw." Now ticked off, Eddie exclaims, "Yeah. We're going to catch the guy." Eddie tells his counterpart, "Hey, thanks for the heads up." Eddie's counterpart asks, "Do you want me to stay here and help?" Kathy answers, "We'd better not do that. We can't chance having both of you seen together." Eddie's counterpart replies, "Okay. I'm going to go into the future and make sure this will work out okay. If I see that it doesn't, I'll be right back. If I don't come back, all is good." Kathy, understanding completely, replies, "Got it." Eddie's counterpart heads back to the portal, back to his time, and then to the future, to make sure nothing unfortunate or unexpected happens. Now inside, Kathy asks, "What are we going to do?" Eddie replies, "Sit and wait, I guess." Kathy asks, "Why don't we stop him before he breaks in or call the police?" Eddie explains, "Unless he actually breaks in, no crime has been committed. So then he'll be back on the street. During the week, I'm at work and you're at school. This place is empty half the day. And you'll be worrying about when he's coming back. And besides, the side door doesn't need a window half the size of the door. I'll just get Mark to replace it." Waiting for the intruder to show up, Eddie and Kathy nervously go from window to window. After 15 minutes, Kathy mentions, "Maybe something changed, and the guy isn't going to show up." Just then, the proverbial unmarked white van slowly backs up the driveway. Eddie and Kathy rush to the dining room, where Eddie peeks through the plantation shutters to size up his opponent. Relieved to see the burglar is not of a formidable build, and working alone, Eddie tells Kathy, "This should be easy." Kathy replies, "Unless he's armed." Eddie replies, "If he's armed, I'll break his arms off. Then he'll be unarmed." In the kitchen, hiding in front of the refrigerator, Eddie is armed with nunchucks and throwing stars. Kathy, also built much better than the intruder, stands a few feet behind Eddie, waiting for the action to begin. At the crash of glass breaking, Eddie whispers to Kathy, "Here we go." Using a power saw, the intruder cuts away the wooden door near the lock, and the door freely opens. Confidently walking inside, the intruder quietly enters the hallway. Seeing the first glimpse of the intruder, by using his nunchucks, Eddie delivers a very powerful horizontal strike to his opponent's left shoulder. Rebounding with a vertical strike to the opponent's right shoulder, Eddie's opponent falls to the floor, stunned and incapacitated. With his opponent now face down, using his foot, Eddie kicks the gun out of the burglar's back pocket. Eddie tells Kathy, "I got him. Call the police." Kathy goes into the bedroom to make the call, but Eddie is not yet finished. Using the same move Hoffer used against Nacla Brocklin, Eddie locks the intruder in a half Nelson and pushes off with his legs. Flipping over 180 degrees, the intruder's arm is severely deranged, evidenced by a loud crack. Eddie then repeats the procedure with the intruder's other arm, demanding to know, "Who are you?" With the intruder screaming in pain, Eddie is not likely to get an answer. Using the technique Eddie used on Goldstein at the service station, Eddie bends the intruder's right leg to 90 degrees, rotating the foot nearly 360 degrees, deranging both the knee and ankle. Moving to the left leg, Eddie finishes off the intruder's lower extremities. Just to make sure the intruder clearly gets the message not to break into Eddie's house again, Eddie hyperextends and breaks both of the intruder's elbows. With the intruder now screaming in pain and hyperventilating, Eddie is not likely to get any answers out of him. Removing the wallet from the burglar's back pocket, Eddie discovers who the intruder is. Kathy, after calling the police, walks out from the bedroom and kicks the intruder in his side, yelling, "Shut up and stop crying like a little baby." Eddie tells Kathy he doesn't look too good right now. Showing Kathy the intruder's driver's license, Eddie tells her, "This guy's name is Giuseppe Vio Otto." As she writes down the name, Kathy yells out, "Hey, Giuseppe, who are you working for?" Vio Otto doesn't answer, but remains relatively motionless, hyperventilating and screaming in pain. Hearing the police arrive, Kathy gets one last swift kick into Vio Otto's side, likely breaking a few ribs. Eddie walks outside to meet Officer Kenneth Wilson, who patrols the same beat as Officer Hayes. Eddie yells out to Officer Wilson, who is approaching carefully with his gun drawn, "Everything's under control. The burglar is laying on the kitchen floor." Officer Wilson holsters his gun, replying, "Okay. Let's see what we got." Eddie and Officer Wilson walk through the open side door. Eddie, pointing out the obvious, tells Officer Wilson he broke in through this door. Officer Wilson, seeing the door in shambles, replies, "I can see that. It looks like pretty sloppy work to me." Walking into the hallway, Eddie informs the officer he had a gun. "It's over there on the floor, near the door to the garage. I kicked it out of his pocket and disarmed him." Officer Wilson looks over at the gun, telling Eddie, "You're really lucky he didn't use it." Walking into the kitchen, Officer Wilson exclaims, "What the?" Kathy tells Officer Wilson that Guy and Eddie got into a fight. "It looks like Giuseppe, here, lost." With a clear look of concern, Officer Wilson replies, "That's the understatement of the year. This gives a totally new meaning to disarming someone. Let me radio for a bus. I'll get the crime scene unit out here too." Kathy comments, "Yeah. The proverbial bus. They ought to ship his ass off to the sanitarium and lock him up forever, along with the other crazies around here." Kathy is clearly ticked off and, with her adrenaline levels off the charts, has absolutely no problem expressing it. And she should be ticked off. Mr. Vio Otto, laying on the floor, just broke into her house and violated her personal space. Eddie and Kathy explain to Officer Wilson what happened as they await the crime scene unit and the ambulance. Officer Wilson mentions that Sunday morning seems to be a popular time for homes to get broken into, not only in the town where Eddie and Kathy live, but in the neighboring towns as well. The town where Eddie and Kathy grew up seems to be particularly hard hit. Now passed out from pain, Vio Otto finally quiets down. Officer Wilson checks Vio Otto's pulse, which is quite rapid, suggesting that he is in fight or flight mode. Officer Wilson informs Kathy and Eddie the shipping department should get here soon. They'll cart him off to the trauma center. Kathy again tells the officer they should ship him off to the sanitarium and lock him away for good. Ever since having to deal with Paul Mahoney in high school, Kathy's solution for every unruly person who causes trouble is to permanently stick them in a sanitarium. Officer Wilson finishes getting Eddie's and Kathy's statements for his report. Vio Otto's statement, for whatever it's worth, will obviously be taken at a later date. The ambulance finally arrives. Surveying the scene, one of the paramedics asks Officer Wilson, "What in the world happened to this guy?" Officer Wilson replies, "He picked a fight with the wrong guy. I'd guess that he lost." The paramedic exclaims, "Yeah. I'd say." With Vio Otto having numerous broken bones and dislocated joints, the paramedics have their work cut out for them just to transfer him to a stretcher. As Vio Otto is shipped out, Kathy comments, "At least he didn't bleed all over my clean floor." While Officer Wilson awaits the crime scene unit, Eddie calls Mark, explaining what happened. Eddie asks if Mark or his father has an exterior door around anywhere. Mark indicates his father has a commercial 36-inch mahogany door left over from a project from a few years ago. Eddie tells Mark that he'll be glad to buy the door from Mark's father. Mark tells Eddie that he'll pick up the door and head right over. A while later, as the crime scene unit is photographing the area, Mark and Paula arrive in Mark's Jeep with the replacement door. Eddie asks the investigator, "Can we start replacing the door?" The investigator replies, "Sure. We've already photographed that area. But if I were you, I'd keep the old door for a while. It's hard evidence." Eddie tells Mark, "We'll just put the old door in the shop." Eddie and Mark get to work, removing the old door and installing the new one. While Eddie and Mark are working, Kathy and Paula head out to the pizzeria and will bring home lunch. While they are installing the new door, Eddie asks Mark, "Is there any chance you can build a wall around this property for me?" Mark asks, "How high?" Eddie replies, 8 feet. 8 feet is a good height for a security wall. The average person cannot jump an 8-foot wall. Mark replies, "That shouldn't be too hard. I'll just get the brick masons who I used for Mr. Crumb's uncle's wall. They do a really good job. And I can put in an electric gate at the driveway." Eddie replies, "Good. I got to keep the riffraff out somehow." Mark jokingly tells Eddie, "I can put some razor wire along the top, if you want." Eddie laughs and replies, "I don't think I want to go to that extreme. But I'm definitely going to be planting a lot of thorny bushes along the outside of the wall." Mark suggests, "Plant them along the inside too." While they are installing the door, Mark tells Eddie, "Wood doors have a problem. They can be easily cut by a saw. What you need to do is go to the hardware store, get a few 8 or 10-inch stainless steel lag bolts, and screw them into the door right above and below the deadbolt. And screw one in below the handle too. Make sure you countersink them, and then fill the hole with wood filler. And when you're done, do the same above and below each of the hinges. It would be a bitch to get a wood saw through that." Eddie replies, "That's a good idea. For a few bucks, you can make a door a whole lot more secure." Mark also suggests, "If you want to make the door even more secure, you can drill a hole through the entire width of the door and install a steel rod." Eddie asks, "When did you come up with this?" Mark replies, "Just now. After seeing what happened to your door, I'm going to reinforce all of mine." Eddie asks Mark, "Where did your dad have the door stored?" Mark replies, "It was in his basement. His basement is full of lighting fixtures, plumbing fixtures, all sorts of wood, and even a few doors. It's a warehouse." Eddie asks Mark, "Do you remember when we went into the future to the year 2040 and went to our storage yards on 2nd Street? Mark replies, "Yeah." Eddie asks, "There wasn't a storage building on it, was there?" Mark replies, "I didn't see one." Eddie suggests, "We should build one there to store all this stuff." Mark replies, "That's a good idea. This kind of stuff just accumulates over the years." Kathy and Paula return with lunch. Eddie and Mark take a break. Not surprisingly, the lunchtime conversation revolves around the attempted burglary and how Eddie came from the past to inform himself and Kathy of what was going to happen. Eddie informs Kathy that Mark will be installing a wall around the property. Kathy has absolutely no objection, and after hearing about the wall, Paula now wants a wall too. After lunch, Eddie and Mark get back to installing the new door, with Kathy and Paula helping. Once the job is finished, the group sits at a table near the pool. Kathy mentions, "Well, I wasn't quite expecting this today." Paula comments, "At least we know who won't be breaking into houses for a long time." Kathy replies, "Seriously. That guy didn't look too good after Eddie was done with him." Eddie reminds Kathy, "Hey, you helped." Kathy replies, "Oh, yeah. So, I did." After a while, Mark and Paula head home, planning exactly where the wall around their property will go. Kathy and Eddie head inside, grateful that the situation today was not any worse than it was. Inside, Eddie tells Kathy, "First, gold shit at the service station. And now this." Kathy sighs and replies, "I'm still waiting for my normal life." Eddie tells Kathy, "You can't have a normal life." Kathy asks, "Why not?" Eddie replies, "Because of the portal and the yellow, blue, and red stones." Kathy relents, "I guess you're right." Eddie suggests, "If you really want a normal life, you'll have to throw all the stones into the sea." Kathy replies, "That ain't happening."